We're here to make a dent in the universe, or else why are we even doing this?
If I don't think I cut out all the fun stuff, because that to me is the fun stuff.
Build that audience, because if you've got no one to sell it to, then it's just going to flop and die, and no one likes a floppy, right?
I'm yet to meet a woman who just kind of grew up confidently in her body.
Welcome to my podcast. I'm Nicole Brumner. Join my weekly conversations with really interesting people as I delve into the stories and experiences that make them uniquely them. I'm Nicole Brumner, your host today. I'm a property developer, property investor, podcaster, author, mother, many different things, tech investor, many different things within the property space. And I'm really excited today to be joined by a rather incredible young lady, Tahira Ali. Tahira, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Nicole. It's such a pleasure to be here with you. And it's such a pleasure to have this conversation.
Definitely. And this is a really important conversation, I believe, not just for women, not just for women within construction, but for anyone who is looking to get into construction and tech and the building industry as a whole, management, everything. So I'm very, very excited about this. Tahira is the executive director of NECA, which is the voice of a $171 billion electrical construction industry that brings the power, light, and communication technology to buildings and communities across the US. And I was looking at how many people it actually represents. And it's, 4,000 member companies. So how many people is that?
Well, Nicole, what's really wonderful, as you mentioned, I'm the executive director of industry innovation for NECA. And so my job is to work with all of our member contractors, with the craft workers that they represent, and figure out ways to help bring technology, bring innovation, and help to support them as they elevate their businesses. So as you mentioned, we have over 4,000 member contractors, and these can be everyone from, you know, a man or a woman working just out of their van or out of their truck to companies with thousands of employees. And so what's really wonderful is we have this broad spectrum and this broad cohort of information and this broad avenue of people of all walks of life and all experience levels and all company sizes that are able to come together under the NECA banner and really try to push the industry forward.
And it's a brand new role for you as well, just from January 2021, is that right?
Yes, ma'am. So I have been in the construction industry for about 8 years. Prior to working with NECA, I worked very closely with a NECA premier partner, Milwaukee Tool. And so I worked on everything from product design to innovation and leading peer groups and leading kind of a similar type of role in my time at Milwaukee Tool. And even before that, I worked on advanced machinery, electronics equipment, robotics. So I've been in kind of this highly technical space for about 15 years, but my time at NECA really started in January of 2021, so January of this year.
Yeah, it's quite an incredible path that you've chosen. So you started with you did an undergrad degree in engineering, is that right? And then how did you progress that?
Absolutely. So I actually, I did my undergraduate work at Georgia Tech in Atlanta. So I grew up in the South. I grew up in right in the suburbs of Atlanta, Georgia, and I studied mechanical engineering and computer science. So the idea was I loved machines, but I wanted I was fascinated by how machines think, how you can not just create something really complex and interesting mechanically, but how you can get it to be elevated to that next level through robotics, through automation, through artificial intelligence. So I started kind of down that path, and I did my undergraduate work at Georgia Tech. And then I also pursued graduate work at Cornell University on the same topics, mechanical engineering, computer science, a little bit of aerospace engineering. And really, again, it was all about what you could do with interesting machines, but at its core, how those machines could help people. And that's really how I got into the construction industry, is that there's no truer way that I have found where you're able to create these really interesting solutions, but actually apply them to an urgent problem today. And so the fact that you could close the loop and be able to work with people, but also be able to work on really advanced equipment, advanced electronics, advanced mechanical systems, I found that to be really fulfilling, especially in the construction and the building industry, because again, these are the people who are building our communities. These are the people who are building, you know, not just building structures, electrical systems, HVAC, but the people who are actually building schools, churches, libraries, like our true fabric of our community. And the ability to serve them and help them has been something that's been really fulfilling in my career.
And it's interesting, we touched on that in the introduction, how with the electrical and construction industry, it really does build our whole communities. And there's no part of your daily life that doesn't touch part of this industry. What was really interesting with what you said there is when you said that you're interested in how machines are, I was expecting you to say how they're built, but of course you said how they think and how they work. And that sort of comes into your AI and robotics background. What is it particularly about that interested you? And where did that come about when you were younger?
Well, I was very, very lucky in the mentors and the stewards that I had around me growing up. I actually, it's funny because so many people think, oh, well, you have two engineering degrees. You must be so good at math and science. But I actually struggled when I was in school. I was actually in remedial classes for both math and science. And what I found that made all the difference for me is that I had a really strong group of advocates around me, not just in my family, but in my teachers, my friends, my peers. And they really encouraged me to push and to learn and helped me learn the right ways, not just to study, but to find passion in the things that you were studying, right? I remember growing up, you know, it wasn't just, you know, why are you studying to learn the physics behind how fast a ball can be thrown, but you know, what can you do with that information? And so having the practical application really interested me. But again, I had a lot of really great teachers along the way who saw me not just, you know, as another number, as a student who maybe wasn't having the highest test scores, but saw me as someone who could have the passion and drive to really sink my teeth into this industry and learn how to be, you know, learn how to overcome that struggle that much more. And I think what that's done is it's allowed me to really, you know, through my own academic challenges and my own professional, you know, struggles and triumphs that I've overcome, it's allowed me to really, you know, just be extra inspired by those who are working in our skilled trades, by those who are working in the building industries, because again, you know, it's all about problem solving. So I think I humbly really relate to this idea of how do you tackle a really big problem and make it something that's manageable and approachable along the way.
And it's fascinating that you came from a background where you were struggling with maths and science to then do what is a very, very challenging degree. My brother did computer engineering and it was tough, the math. So was it about, as you say, learning how to study, but also understanding how it worked and garnishing a greater understanding of these actual processes rather than just theory?
Absolutely. And I think it's something that's so important for all of our listeners and viewers is that, you know, it's not just about what's the coolest, you know, robot or the coolest machine or the coolest algorithm. It's about, you know, what is the significance that you can bring with a solution? And that's really, you know, how I've been able to add joy and utility in my career is that, you know, I've done everything from design drills and saws to iPhone apps and Android apps and advanced aerospace subsystems and advanced robotics. And what I've really found is that, you know, at the core of it, you can solve any cool problem, but it's about not just the problem and the solution, but it's about the pain points. It's about the workflow. It's about the people who will be interacting with or directly affected by the solution that you're creating. And so that's something that I think at its core, whether you're designing, you know, something that's completely stationary or something that's, you know, a supercomputer, it's so critical that you focus on the people, you focus on the user, and you focus on understanding the needs to help elevate their experience.
You told me a great story that illustrates the point you've just made about how you had other opportunities after you graduated, and yet you chose Mwaki. So can you tell us that story again, and also the great opportunity that you did have that you turned down for Mwaki?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, life is all a series of experiences and series of decisions. And as I mentioned, as we've talked about, for me, you know, it's one thing to be successful. It's another to be successful and be significant. And that was, again, I derive my significance from being a part of solutions where I can see the tangible progress, and I can see, you know, the people side of it, the humanity side of it. And as we chatted about previously, I actually, when I was finishing up my graduate work, I was kind of on track to go to, you know, the NASA's, the SpaceX, the Lincoln Labs, kind of this very highly prestigious academic route, which is a beautiful path for so many people and so many of my classmates and colleagues. And I actually happened to, through a series of kind of happenstance events, I happened to end up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which was a place I'd never been. And I was at Milwaukee Tool's headquarters, and I got to go on this tour and see, you know, end to end how their design process worked. And I had never in my career, in my, you know, kind of advanced work, seen a place where you could work on highly technical systems, highly technical solutions, but still apply them to the people side of things, be involved in not just creating the solutions, but delivering them, the implementation. And again, that user focus, especially at Mwaki Tool, they're brilliantly known in the industry and in all of product design for their ability to really hone in on, you know, elevating and focusing in on this user-driven design. And so the fact that I was able to see this, and again, in such an industry that's pivotal to our community, to our society, I think I kind of, I don't know if I so much convinced them to hire me as I just kind of let them know, you know, this is where I'm going to be. I don't think I'm leaving, guys. I think you're kind of stuck with me. But it led to a beautiful career and a beautiful kind of pivot into something that's been really fulfilling for me personally and professionally.
Yeah, and for nearly a decade as well, where you were able to take this user experience that you saw, and it's something that you don't usually associate with a company like this. It's usually associated with the apps or software design, and yet user experience, the UX, is so important in every little thing that we do. And that was something that you saw and you appreciated within that role, and you were there for over 8 years, I can see. Would you mind talking about gender and ethnic minorities? I know that some people say no, talking about it perpetuates the problem, but is this something that you're happy to talk about?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things that I think is sometimes challenging is if there's something obvious or something looming and you don't address it, sometimes, you know, again, you don't want to get stuck into the situation where that's the only thing you talk about. But at the same time, part of your identity, part of your experiences, everything is shaped by those you work with, those you interact with, how you were raised. And I think, you know, one of the things that's really powerful is when we talk about diversity, when we talk about experience and equity and how to be a good, you know, advocate for yourself and others before you and those coming after you, you kind of, in my experience, it's good to acknowledge and celebrate and really look in the face of, you know, the things that make us different and the things that make us the same, right? Because there's so much that can be said, you know, even in the industry we're talking about, right? Whether you're regionally from the US or Europe or Australia or China or South America, you have different experiences with how you build, the different materials, the different supply chain, how things are bidded. And it's the same thing even regionally or even by trade. And so I think gender, just as much as the trade you studied, just as much as your local experiences, your socioeconomic background, all of these things, your ethnicity, all of these things help to enrich kind of the perspective that you bring to the table, and especially, you know, in my field and innovation, it's so important that you have unique perspectives and that you bring different voices to the table when you're looking at how to create a cohesive solution.
Absolutely. It's so important that it's not just about race and it's not just about gender. Like you touched on there, it's socioeconomic, and people who have had a different upbringing are going to have a completely different focus and a different outlook on how things are shaped and how innovations come about than other people. And that is really interesting. How did you find the gender split when you started your initial university degree?
Oh my gosh, I think we've talked about this a little bit. So I actually was on a women's council at Georgia Tech when I first started out. And even, you know, to put it in perspective of how really cool I was in robotics in high school. And I remember so many, you know, when I first started, it was maybe five of us starting this robotics club, this robotics team. And, you know, I would regularly be dragging my female friends to come with me. And what was really powerful in this robotics program in particular is that there were opportunities for, you know, technical building, but also things like scouting, things like strategy, things like PR, which, you know, typically you can bring in different viewpoints, men and women, or girls and boys at the time, to become interested, and then, you know, expose those interested in PR a little bit to the technical side, or expose those interested in the technical side to kind of those softer humanity sides as well. And I just remember when I started, again, you know, I was the only female. And by the time I left, by the time I graduated from my high school, we had about, you know, a couple hundred people in the program. So girls and boys, aplenty. And so that's kind of been my experience, even when I was in my undergraduate work and my graduate work, and even, you know, while working in the construction industry, I've been fortunate to be one of the trailblazers and one of the first few women. But I've also, so I've experienced everything from, you know, working in buildings that didn't have female bathrooms, all the way up to being able to, you know, kind of look behind me at this great legacy and something that continues to grow, of having more and more women's groups, women's affinity, women in the industry, young girls looking at the trades, young girls looking at math and science and technology fields. And so it's just, it's always got to be something that we put stewardship to and we put mentorship and intention towards, I think.
That's right. And it's also for women to look at the industry and see women like you who are beautiful and glamorous and intelligent and articulate and think, that is a valid career option for me, when often that's not how women are portrayed in the industry. And like you say, there are so many different aspects of this construction industry, whether you go on the tools or whether you choose to go into PR or accounts, it's still within this whole industry and it's still a part of that. So how important is it, do you think, for women to see you and see that you look like them? And perhaps you come from the same ethnic background or what religion, and they see you, and do they feel empowered by that, do you think?
I think it's always powerful when you can see a little bit of yourself in someone who's doing, you know, something that maybe you never considered. And, you know, whether it's someone who looks at me as a Muslim woman or as a woman, or even, you know, as someone who struggled with math and science, being able to kind of look at someone else and see a little bit of how you identify in them and their experiences is really, really powerful. And again, you know, this is true for men and women. And, you know, what's fortunate is that a lot of young boys, especially, have so many role models in math, science, and technology, in construction. And so I think it's really important that we continue to push the envelope and we continue to kind of create a path for anyone, but especially, you know, minorities, especially women, especially people who might have, you know, different backgrounds or different interests, to look at something like the construction industry. Because whether you're looking at project coordination, whether you're looking at virtual reality, whether you're looking at kind of the people side of things, or whether you're looking at physical building, there's so many opportunities, and everything gets stronger when you have a more diverse skill set working and tackling the same problems.
And tapping into their collective outlooks. You told me a lovely story about how you're giving a talk and you featured a woman in your slide. And she happened to be in the audience, and it just shows how few people there are like you in the industry at the moment. But that's clearly changing, and that's all down to you and being a trailblazer in this area. What did your family think of this when you decided to go down this path with engineering and robotics?
Well, to put it in perspective, I think so many people are blessed to go down the path that their parents or their family goes down. When I was studying engineering, a majority of my classmates had parents or uncles or family friends who were engineers, and I didn't so much have that experience. So again, I had to kind of look all over for role models to figure out a way to see myself in this career path. But, what's been wonderful is that while my parents didn't necessarily have the background or understand that, that field, what they did kind of instill in my siblings and I is this value in working hard, and this value in kind of almost foolhardily not ever thinking that you aren't good enough or thinking that you can't achieve whatever you want to achieve. And I think that that's something that is really powerful. The idea that maybe you won't necessarily be able to chart every step of success or every step of the way. I certainly, haven't been able to kind of chart a clear 5-year or 10-year plan for my own career, but just knowing that if you do your best, if you try hard, you're able to just kind of create your own path and seize opportunities as they arise. And that, I think, is really the part that has been powerful. Is it's not necessarily that I grew up with a family who had dreams for me to be in this industry or in this career, but it's more that they gave me the space to be successful in whatever way that looked for me.
And it seems like they instilled within you this belief that there was no glass ceiling, or that there was no barriers to entry for you to pursue this particular path. And that's must be something that you're taking on board now as you raise your child that you've had recently, and look to how you're going to direct and shape his life as well going forward. So speaking about going forward and how you will now move ahead with this new role within NECA, have you got some clear ideas about some of the innovation that you want to look at for this industry?
Absolutely. And I think, again, if you want to be a true advocate, it's all about how you kind of let the users, let the voice of the people doing the work or the people who are your constituents kind of drive where things go. And so for me, what's really powerful, what's really exciting is, I have this highly technical background, and I'm able to, and I have spent many years of my career advocating, not just for the electrical contractors and the electrical trade, but for mechanical, for sheet metal, for general contractors as well. And so what I'm really excited about to kind of continue to shape this role and to shape the industry is to look at the pain points, the successes, how people do things well, how people can learn from one another within the electrical contracting industry. And again, not just approach, here's a cookie cutter solution, or here's how every company should be, but help people to understand, more of the techniques. Like, how do you investigate new solutions? How do you understand what are your pain points? And how do you help to find and pilot the types of innovations being everything from, best practices, standard operating procedures, KPIs, key performance indicators, or robots, machines, whatever it is, to help drive tangible success. And then how do you measure that success and continue to compound upon, creating more avenues to be more productive, to be more accurate in your bids, to drive in schedules, to increase market share. And so again, you know, what I hope to do and what I'm blessed and humbled to be a part of NECA for is this idea that we can help to serve the industry and make electrical contracting and construction as a whole more productive, more safer, more effective based on the actual tangible needs of our contractors today.
So it sounds like you have developed a key set of indicators and things that you hope to achieve in the first X number of months that you're there. Was this something that was a new role that you've stepped into or a role that was already existed within NECA?
So NECA's had their innovation initiative, I would say, for about a little over a year now. And so what I'm really, you know, fortunate in is that even before they had like an innovation department or kind of that dedicated branch of the organization, you know, innovation is such a beautiful concept because everyone's working on it in some way or other, whether they're looking at it from the government side or the communications or the education or just generally, you know, innovation can be everything from how you recruit or how you retain or how you train, or, you know, we talked about bringing the right types of people and the right mentality into the industry. So what's really powerful is not only has NECA always been, you know, a service to be more forward thinking to the members we represent, but I also in my career have been able to support NECA and other organizations in, you know, running peer groups, in engaging in pilot studies, in researching technology and providing, you know, a bevy of options to kind of go after how do you tackle the biggest problems, the biggest challenges for, you know, the construction industry. And so it's exciting because this is kind of a revamp on something that's been going on for many years. And I get to not only kind of inherit and make things, you know, a little bit more of what I see as the vision of it, but I also get this great opportunity to work with an astounding team that's laid the foundation for delivering solutions to the people who, you know, again, the people who actually truly are building and shaping the construction industry.
And your initial interactions with them, do you feel that NECA and the members are quite receptive to innovation and change, or is it something that there's a little skepticism towards initially and then they warm to?
I think it depends on the innovation and the change. I think so much of it is contextual, right? You know, when you look at something, you have to be thinking about what the ROI is, or, you know, what people have the bandwidth for. And so again, you know, this isn't so much about, you know, what robot or drone or algorithm do I think is right for the industry or right for every contractor, but more, you know, given the situation, given the resources, given the bandwidth that, you know, you mentioned our 4,000 member contractors. So every contractor, you know, there may be some general overlaps, but everyone has a different experience. So how do you tailor these solutions in a way that they're presented, that they can be kind of customized to meet people where they're at? And again, that goes back to, you know, it's not about what I think is the best. It's not about, you know, how I want a drill or a tool or software or hardware to be designed. It's about those who are going to actually have to use it. And so I think that's what's really exciting is for me, it's, you know, there's a million great solutions out there, but how do we get the right solutions in the right hands of the right people and also support them so they're able to actually trial them and see results without disrupting their processes so much that it becomes prohibitive?
Yeah, and having very demonstrable safety and improvements in safety is clearly always going to be a priority too. And if that can be demonstrated, then that's always welcomed. Now, one of the questions I get asked most of all, being a woman in construction, is other women in particular coming up to me and saying, I'm interested in construction. What is the best way of me to get an idea as to all the many branches of construction that there are and all the many jobs? And one thing I always say is the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors has an excellent surveying course that you can do as an intern, and it's an undergrad program. They'll put you through your graduate your degree and then your graduate degree. Is there something similar in the US? And is this a question that you get asked a lot, first of all? And secondly, is there a similar process that people can go through if they are interested in this industry?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, Nicole. I think the question that I get asked a lot is, and again, you know, I speak probably equally as much to technology enthusiasts as I do to, you know, young women, like Society of Women in Engineering, those types of groups, as I do to the construction industry. And I get a lot of people who ask me, like, how do I get your type of job? How do I get to solve cool problems? And what's interesting is that's kind of exactly what construction is it's building cool things and solving cool problems. You know, what I always encourage people to do if they are in university is there's so many construction management programs. There's so many, you know, in the same way I work for NECA at a professional level, there are student chapters for the electrical trades, the mechanical trades, for general contractors, etc. But I also encourage people to reach out to those around them, or reach out even to me, to you, to anyone, because again, there's this huge opportunity and responsibility for us to help create avenues for others to become successful, right? No one kind of gets there on their own, and we all have so much help and so much, you know, we're all blessed for the experiences and the footprints that kind of guide and change our own lives. And so it's really powerful, I think, to have sponsors and mentors that don't necessarily even look like you. Again, we talked about representation, and that's so important, but in an industry such as construction, you aren't always going to find, you know, a nice display of female role models, although that is growing. And so, you know, I would say that a great place to start is even, you know, going to like nicanet.org, which is the NECA website, and just, you know, investigating what the trades have to offer, because whether you're looking electrical, mechanical, sheet metal, whether you're looking general contractors, whether you're looking even more specialty, you know, wall and ceiling, for example, there's so many apprentice programs, there's so many ways to get involved. And what's really, really rewarding is that all of these programs have so many opportunity for people to learn and kind of make the career their own. And there's so many opportunities for people to, especially these days, get involved. You know, it's not just digging ditches. It's learning about robotics. It's learning about virtual design and construction. It's learning about BIM, building information modeling. So, you know, you could be working in construction and what you're doing is virtual reality through a 3D headset, or it's, you know, people focused, you know, consulting and designing of the buildings, or it's architecture, or it's generative design with Autodesk, you know, or again, it could be digging ditches and hammering nails, because there's so many rewarding paths that you can go down. And so I would highly suggest anyone interested to, again, reach out to anyone they can. I'm always a resource, but also reach out to kind of our trade groups, which I think is kind of, as you mentioned, a parallel to, you know, learning about the apprenticeship programs, learning about the opportunities to kind of accelerate your own training and learning.
And you mentioned the NECA website there, which is great. What's the best place for people to get in touch with you personally?
Well, I will say one really easy and great way to get in touch with me is LinkedIn. Another way to get in touch with me is my email, Tahira, T-A-U-H-I-R-A, at nicanet.org. And again, you know, one thing that I'm very fortunate with is that I'm pretty easy to find. So even just Googling Tahira or Tahira Ali will bring up a lot of information and a lot of kind of avenues to get in touch with me. And I cannot stress enough, don't ever hesitate to reach out if you have a question of me, of anyone, because the worst thing you can do is kind of limit yourself. And again, you know, I'm speaking as a woman, as a female, as an executive, but even again, you know, going back as a young girl who struggled with math and science, you know, and if I didn't have the right mentors, the right sponsors, the right teachers and facilitators at those moments in my life, I could be equally, you know, happy and fulfilled, but in a completely different career path. And so it's amazing how much you can achieve that you don't even know that's ahead of you.
That's right. And yeah, like you've so kindly pointed out, there are so many people like yourself who are willing to give up their time for people, because in the past, people have given up their time for them, and we all like to play it forward. There are not many in the industry that don't like to play it forward. Just the last topic I wanted to touch on is around the robotics and also the change in the demand for various areas of construction due to robotics and perhaps AI, AR, these types of things. Often we're told that whole segments of the construction industry in particular are going to be wiped out because of the machines. And I think Elon Musk very famously said, when asked about his fears for the future, he just said, "I hope the machines are nice to us." So what are some of the innovations you can see from your very good viewpoint on how things might change over the next decade, and what sort of occupations you think will no longer be required going forward and be perhaps replaced by machines within this construction industry?
No, Nicole, I think that's such an interesting and powerful question. And it's a really fun one too, because again, when we look at the future, it's so easy to kind of subscribe to that sci-fi movie, like the robots are going to take over kind of perception. But at the same time, what I think is far closer to reality is that machines are going to provide us information that allows us to better do our jobs or more safely do our jobs, right? We're seeing a lot of things like, you know, autonomous equipment or robotics or machine learning. And a lot of that's applied to things like, for example, remote tools. So the ability to be able to go and cut a live line using Bluetooth so that you're not, you know, within 100-foot radius of something that could explode. So again, it's that safety, or rather than, you know, hoisting someone on a ladder or bucket truck, being able to send a drone up to do an inspection, you know, of a power line or under a bridge. So again, there's these opportunities to take robots and put them in, you know, in mines, in quarries, to put them in, traditionally dangerous situations so the humans don't have to be as exposed. But at the same time, there's, you know, we've been trying for so many years to replicate the human brain and the sensors and the quick processing that humans are able to do. What machines allow us to do is they allow us to have more sensors, have more data. But at the end of the day, that data is then driving decisions that are made that are empowered by people who have that expertise. And so what I see is, you know, machines, robotics, AI, all these things allow us to be a lot more intelligent and a lot safer in gathering up information and in, you know, physically doing the work. But we're always going to need to have, you know, the mental experts, those subject matter experts. And so what I see is people will still be very much involved in the process. They already are. It's just the workflow will change. And again, the hope is that we're able to drive more efficiency, we're able to drive more safety, we're able to drive more efficacy. But again, you know, you aren't able to, especially in construction, it's such a volatile industry, you'll never be able to wipe out that power that comes from quick thinking, quick expertise, quick decision making.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Tahira, for your time today. It is fascinating. And I would encourage people to consider construction and consider particularly around this robotics side and the engineering side, because as you can see, you do get to solve some really cool problems. So Tahira, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Nicole. It's an honor and a privilege. I appreciate, again, your time and all the fun topics we were able to cover off on today.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please support us with a like, comment, subscribe, and share. And you can always join the conversation live across my YouTube, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages at 1 p.m. every Thursday. See you there soon.